Blog Talk Radio.
Cowards try to change our lives, change the things they despise in America. But heroes.
And I'm sorry, but I'm going to cut that short because I want to get to as much content as possible today. And I just noticed that somehow, and I swear I set the time on this for 30 minutes, but apparently I did not. And so it's only given me literally 30 minutes to do a show today. Technically, it's given me 15, but then 15 minutes carry over after that. So instead of 45 minutes, I've only got a half hour to try to get as much in as possible today. And so I will do that without a whole lot of small talk or jibber-jabber or anything like that. Riff-raff, ridiculous musings and mutterings, you name it. Just strictly sticking to content as much as possible today. And because I inadvertently cut myself short, there's probably things I won't get to even with that. But anyway, good to have you listening, whether you're listening live or on the archives whenever that time comes and whenever you get around to listening to the show today, or today's show rather. The call-in number, if you are calling in, if you are listening live, I almost hesitate to do this, not really. But we did have, or I did have, the not-so-pleasant experience yesterday. But it is 347-989-8387, and the chat room is open as well. Talking about cultural Marxism, talked about kind of the roots, the history of it yesterday. I don't know, because I did cut myself short, I was going to pick up again with Hillary Clinton wanting Congress, wanting the federal government to provide even more or special funding, if you will, to Planned Parenthood because of the Zika virus, so that we can fund Planned Parenthood and they can then turn around and abort as many babies as possible, basically, whether they have the Zika virus or whether they don't have the Zika virus. This story from, and this link from lifenews.com, apparently they have told some women, told some mothers, just the possibility that their baby or that they might have contracted Zika virus means that they should abort their baby. But I did want to mention, and apparently there's a video that is out. It's been released by Gary Bauer's American Values Action Pack. And it basically, I mentioned that there are four key positions, as this says from charismanews.com, that Hillary Clinton holds on the issue of life for the unborn, which makes her indeed an abortion extremist. I remember three of them yesterday. I forgot one. The four positions that this group, this pack, hits on in their video is that she wants to expand taxpayer funding for abortion. She made the remark that we have to change deep-seated cultural codes and religious beliefs. The one that I forgot about was that she did say, I recall her saying it, I just forgot it yesterday. She did say that unborn babies have no constitutional rights whatsoever, and she has made a repeated commitment to appoint only pro-abortion judges to the Supreme Court. And as I mentioned, in context of the roots, the beginnings of cultural Marxism, that's an attack, of course, on the family. Now, I mentioned the attack on the family unit going back to the Great Society, in which we basically de-incentivized marriage, in which we incentivized, rather, single parenthood, single motherhood, and I obviously I've pulled abortion into this. And we can also look at the progressives and the cultural Marxist attempts to redefine the family unit with, of course, the LGBT and particularly the gay and lesbian agenda in that, the activist agenda, to be fair, but that is the branch, so to speak, that controls the whole ball of wax. I wanted to mention this just because I am convinced that this indeed will be something that they will try to normalize. They're already trying to normalize it as we speak. And as a matter of fact, I have not read the story. I'll probably have to click on it and read it at some point if my curiosity gets the better of me. But Turkey, which obviously there's a lot going on in Turkey, and as a matter of fact, possibly something very big, even in terms of a prophetic kind of end times alliance between Turkey and Russia. President Erdogan and President Putin have now kind of kissed and made up, apparently, and are friends, so to speak, when it looked like they were going to be going at one another. They've made some type of an alliance. And Turkey has legalized, to some extent, pedophilia in their country. And you can scoff at this. You can mock this as I say it. You can laugh at me if you can disagree. But this will be something, and I would even go so far as to say, mark my words. Could I be wrong? Of course I could be wrong. But this will be something that they will attempt to normalize, that they already are saying it's just basically an orientation, that people can't change who they are when it comes to being pedophiles. And it will be, there will be an attempt to normalize it, just as there's been the attempt, and to a very large degree, unfortunately, a successful attempt to normalize and equalize homosexual marriage, homosexual relationships, transgenderism, what have you. They obviously, what a lot of people talk about is polyamorous relationships, polyamorous, more than one marriage, perhaps, polygamy. But anyway, this comes from the Christian Post. Pedophilia, the next sin to be normalized. Professor questions whether adult child sex is really immoral. So, again, you have people that right now are basically opening that door to try to convince the rest of us. Will they have a hard time, in a sense, convincing people? Yeah, but they will try to convince the rest of us that maybe this isn't such a big deal. An academic book that suggests the moral status of pedophilia is unclear has some prominent social conservatives saying that we are now on a familiar, troubling path toward normalization of things once considered unthinkable. The book is called Pedophilia and Adult Child Sex, a Philosophical Analysis by Stephen Kirshner, professor and chair of the philosophy department at State University of New York at Fredonia. It was released actually last year and just recently came to the attention of conservatives, so I guess maybe it's a good thing that this apparently didn't make too many waves out there, actually. It examines the moral status of sexual relationships between adults and children, explores whether those who engage in that kind of sex have a disease, act wrongly, or are vicious, and engages the surrounding legal issues. The publisher describes the book on its website thusly, saying this book provides a philosophical analysis of adult child sex and pedophilia. This sex intuitively strikes many people as sick, disgusting, and wrong. The problem, as they say, is that it is not clear whether these judgments are justified and whether they are aesthetic or moral. By analogy, many people find it disgusting to view images of obese people having sex, but it is hard to see what is morally undesirable about such sex. Here the judgment is aesthetic. Apparently, indeed, the publisher compared adult child sex to two fat people having sex. They made that moral equivalency, or they said, that's not really a moral thing. That's just disgusting to think about or look at. So maybe this isn't really a moral thing. Maybe this is just disgusting to look about or look at or think about. Again, Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, said that while he does not believe that pedophilia will be mainstreamed in the next few years, and again, I'm not so sure, maybe not in the next few years, but they'll try. But he says it won't be mainstream since most Americans are still repulsed by it, Books like Kirshner's indicate yet another dark front in the left's strategic war on Judeo-Christian moral norms, and again, I'll say, on the family as well. Not necessarily with this, but you can throw sexual liberation, sexual deviancy, what have you. Again, as mentioned, it says adult child sex, according to Kirshner's book, involving willing participants, has an unclear moral status. La Barbera said Kirshner is injecting nuance and situational ambiguity to chip away the near-universal understanding that sex between adults and kids is always wrong. Sex radicals have learned from the successful campaign by gay militants to normalize once taboo behaviors and concepts like same-sex marriage. Now they are in, quote, the study phase on pedophilia. And it's also mentioned here in this particular article that some psychologists are now referring to pedophilia indeed as a sexual orientation, giving it a degree, however small, of seeming legitimacy, even as laws forbidding adult child sex and child porn remain on the books. Well, again, maybe not completely so much in Turkey anymore. Yet others are even proclaiming themselves to be pedophiles, though they stipulate they are virtuous and that they never intend to act on their impulses, as Todd Nickerson did in a Salon essay from last year. So, again, but here it is. They are absolutely opening the door. I think that's a good way to put it. They are in the study phase on pedophilia, trying to determine, is it really all that bad? Is it something that people just can't control? Is it another orientation that they're kind of cursed with? You know, it's hard to say born with, although there was an LGBT group in Dallas, Texas, that I believe, if memory serves correctly, actually used that phrasing, that pedophiles are born that way, or born with that mindset. But again, they're opening that door to say that, you know, maybe this isn't as bad of a thing as what we believe. And of course, it is a very bad thing, as it says, I believe, in this article, if not in this article, actually, yes, here at the bottom of the article, sex with children is inherently exploitative and immoral. It corrupts and victimizes kids who often grow up to have perverse desires toward children themselves. And this, of course, has been more or less proven to be true. Now, in terms of trying to redefine the family in the lesbian gay sense, I don't really have a story on that, but I do want to share what LGBT activist groups, advocacy groups, are doing in trying to get the Big 12 Conference to reject the application for BYU, Brigham Young University, to join the Big 12, because BYU, of course, is a Mormon school. And as a Mormon school, they have rather strict guidelines. They have an honor code. And in that honor code, they do not ban homosexuals or LGBTs from their campus, but they do more or less ban, more or less not allow, homosexual relationships or activities on their campus, as much as they can control that. You know, obviously you can't be with somebody 24/7. But anyway, 26 LGBT organizations are demanding that the Big 12 block the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints operated Brigham Young University from joining their conference because of the institution's biblical, or if you prefer, religious stance on same-sex marriage. And it is biblical, but obviously there are some things with the Mormon faith that don't really jive with biblical, if you will, fundamentalist Christian beliefs and faith doctrine. But anyway, that's why they want to keep BYU from joining the Big 12. The Big 12 is looking to add some schools to their conference, but Athlete Ally and 25 other LGBT advocacy groups sent a letter to the Big 12 commissioner, Bob Bowlesby, and the leadership of schools within the conference to warn about BYU's policies that they believe to be discriminatory toward the LGBT community. The letter read, in part, "The Big 12 is a conference committed to sportsmanship, fair play, and inclusion, both on and off the playing field. You are known for your dedication to fans and your commitment to the welfare of your student-athletes. Adding a school like BYU to your membership, while it still champions anti-LGBT policies and practices, would greatly undermine these Big 12 values. Notice, of course, that they had to put inclusion both in and off the playing field in their letter to try to trap them, to try to put them on a little bit of a guilt trip and try to rhetorically say or rhetorically ask, well, you want to be inclusive, don't you? You don't want to discriminate. You don't want a bunch of bigots. You don't want a bigoted homophobic school in your conference, do you? Anyway, there, like I said, there's about 26 groups that have combined to try to keep BYU from joining the Big 12, including actually the National Organization for Women. The letter contends that the Big 12 is overwhelmingly LGBT inclusive, with 9 out of the 10 member schools having explicit protections based on sexual orientation and have LGBT resource centers. Additionally, 8 of the 10 member schools have protections for students based on gender identity. They say BYU, conversely, actively and openly discriminates against its LGBT students and staff. It provides no protections for LGBT students. In fact, through its policies, BYU is very clear about its intent to discriminate against openly LGBT students. Now, let me read, in part, the honor code of BYU, because it doesn't mention homosexuality, yes, but I think it's important that we consider the context as well. And as mentioned here at Christian Post, the LGBT is trying to say that BYU students can be suspended for being openly LGBT, but the BYU honor code doesn't say that. Part of the honor code says, once stated same gender attraction is not an honor code issue. As a matter of fact, or to be accurate, they're not going to suspend people for being gay or for being lesbian or for being transgender. But it says, however, the honor code requires all members of the university community to manifest a strict commitment to the law of chastity. Homosexual behavior is inappropriate and violates the honor code. Homosexual behavior includes not only sexual relations between members of the same sex, but all forms of physical intimacy that give expression to homosexual feelings. Now, again, it does mention homosexuality, homosexual relationships, actions, if you will. But again, consider the context. Their honor code calls for a strict commitment to the law of chastity for all students. All means all, whether you're homosexual, whether you're heterosexual. If I had to take a guess, I would imagine that if, say BYU had a football player, and let's say, I don't know, a women's basketball player that were dating one another, and let's say that they were not married, but that they lived together in an apartment on campus or close to campus. And again, I don't know the legal or the jurisdictional whatever of all this, but again, let's just say that it made it look like that they were from a Christian point of view, living in sin, if you will, as many Christians would say. A heterosexual, again, this is hypothetical, but a heterosexual couple, I would imagine that would be frowned upon by the administration, by the staff of BYU, and I would imagine, indeed, if they had any kind of proof that they were having, say, premarital sex, if you want to put it that way, that they would consider that a violation of their honor code as well. So the honor code, I think if we're going to be honest, for BYU, does not discriminate against homosexuals. Certainly it doesn't single out homosexuals to discriminate against. It calls for a strict commitment, as it says, to the law of chastity. But here you have, again, these groups that are trying to keep BYU out of the Big 12 conference because they don't agree with their religious beliefs. And again, there's even an LGBT, off-campus LGBT group that is affiliated with BYU that did not, I repeat, did not participate in this letter against BYU, saying that if BYU would be admitted into the Big 12, that it might open up dialogue between the school and LGBT students at the school at BYU. But anyway, that is, again, something that they are trying to do. They're trying to bully another school, another conference, another group that they don't agree with, that has traditional values, traditional beliefs, Christian beliefs on this. Now, again, I'm really kind of bummed out that unfortunately I did what I did as far as cutting my own shows short here today. But I'm going to stick now kind of on the whole school subject. And one of the things that is being put into our public school system, public education system, distributed in schools around the country from the Washington Free Beacon, is this so-called gender unicorn that lets kids color in their gender identity. A transgender advocacy group is providing schools with the cartoon of a purple unicorn who appears to be thinking about the LGBT rainbow, causing outrage from parents. One district in North Carolina was met with protest after it used the gender unicorn in its faculty training. And I'll just mention, since it mentions North Carolina, it may be the same school district as the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District, which is the 18th largest school district in the country, the second largest in North Carolina. They are now saying that children shouldn't be called boys or girls, that they instead should be called students, scholars, what have you, that you have to use all these types of pronouns, whether it's zer, z, whatever, all of these little made-up words, but that students in their school district shouldn't be called boys and girls. Anyway, but this group has this gender unicorn that allows kids to color in what they consider their gender identity, their sexual orientation, who they're attracted to, what have you. It's another case of indoctrination. It's another case of, again, trying to, as mentioned on yesterday's show, trying to expose some of the youngest kids to this as early as possible to get them to believe that this is acceptable, that this is perfectly fine, that this is what tolerant, wise, mature, compassionate people do, and twist their minds in that way. Twist their minds certainly away from God, away from natural biology, natural law, common sense, objective truth, you name it. Now, again, just real quickly, I'm going to try just to mention these stories real quickly and then close here. In Florida, a University of Florida professor is warning her students not to use the term melting pot unless they want to risk a hit to their grades. DailyCall.com art professor Pamela Brecca, first reported by Campus Reform, and basically she is saying, don't say that this country, even several online assignments apparently, a warning in all caps, do not ever use the phrase melting pot in this class. In this class, we celebrate diversity, not sameness. Well, what is diversity? What is a melting pot if not diverse? That's the whole idea of a melting pot, that you have people of different cultures, of different faiths even, of different races and ethnicities, that nevertheless, ideally, all come together wanting to be Americans, wanting to contribute to America, wanting to make America better, and even though they have their differences, they have that same goal, that same desire, and they come together to make the country as good as it can be. But she says, don't call it a melting pot. She said that signals a Euro-white colonial standard, point blank, period. And again, as mentioned on yesterday's show, this is kind of the foundings, particularly in the early to mid 20th century, where they said, we basically, the cultural Marxists, the progressives said, we have to get away from this white European dominancy, white European favoritism, white European power, and so it is. And then obviously this person is, all in all, a complete cultural Marxist. She said instead of calling it a melting pot, calling it some kind of a salad or something ridiculous like that, it's somewhere in the article. I read it yesterday or saw it yesterday. I'm not seeing it right now at the moment. But basically, again, here it is actually saying that America's diversity is as a salad where individual ingredients are mixed together but remain distinct. Well, so do they many times in many people's view in a melting pot. But she says if you call it a melting pot, then your grades may take a hit. And finally, the last example of cultural Marxism, silencing speech, trying to control people, University of Houston suspended a student, actually the vice president of the University Student Government Association, gave her a 50-day suspension when she made a post saying all lives matter on social media. It was after the murder of five police officers in Dallas. She said, forget Black Lives Matter, more like all lives matter. The school suspended her because people got upset, people got offended, people thought that's not appropriate, that's racist and discriminatory in some way to say that all lives matter, you have to say Black Lives Matter, and they suspended her for 50 days. Now, I have to close here on a good note because I like to do this when I can. From the Daily Signal, they had this bill out in California that it looked like was going to pass. It did not. It would have severely hampered, maybe done away with religious liberty, maybe done away in the long term with at least some Christian schools in the state of California. But what happened, and again, this was a bill that it looked like it was going to pass, a state assembly bill, would have curtailed the freedom of private religious colleges, and literally tens of thousands of people mobilized to make phone calls, write their legislators, and participate in the political process, according to William Jessup University President John Jackson. And they said, we were hearing from legislators who said that they had gotten hundreds and hundreds of phone calls on just this one piece of legislation. And you know what? It worked. It caused them to remove portions of California Senate Bill 1146 that would have harmed the right of religious colleges to operate according to their principles by people calling in, by people putting pressure on their elected representatives. They caused this bill to basically not necessarily die, but to change, to remove some of these pieces and some of these stipulations that would have severely hampered religious liberty and the rights of these Christian schools to basically be Christian schools. And of course, it was one of these things where it would have punished them in some way for so-called discriminating against LGBT or being discriminatory, being bigoted, what have you. But the people in California spoke up, spoke out, contacted their representatives, their state representatives, their state senators, and said, no, you're not going to do this. We don't want it. And they won. They seemingly won this victory. It still happens. It's still possible whenever we stand up and fight. And these are the things that are always, always worth standing up and fighting for, is our religious liberty, our basic inherent freedoms, whether they're at our state level, whether they're at our national level, you name it. Okay, that's the end of the show for today. Hopefully it was good for you. Hopefully you got something out of it. No interruptions today, so that was a good thing. Everyone, take care. God bless. Have a great week. You've been listening to American Faith Today.